Welcome to the Northern Mythology Podcast. I'm Daniel Farrand, owner of the company Hornswoden. And before we get into today's show, I do have to do a quick plug for our Patreon. It's how we keep the lights on. It's how we pay all the people behind the scenes. So every week you get a bonus episode, which is a Q&A episode with our guest. We record that right after the main show and you can submit your questions live or beforehand. And another bonus is also you get to watch the episodes live, which is a lovely feature because usually there's a chat going on. It's an episode within an episode. And it tend to be a lot of fun. You get early access to the episodes, and there's also a story time with Jonas Lorentzen, where me and Jonas sit down. We usually have a drink, and they're a lot of fun. We read through one of the sagas and just have a laugh. So you get all of those, but you get the entire back catalogue as well when you sign up. So there's probably years of material at this point to go through. And if you can't support financially through Patreon, then just a like, share, comment on all the different platforms. It's just Nordic Mythology Podcast. And a lot of episodes recently have been having a good visual content to them. We had Terry Gunnell, who brought a little slideshow in. So don't forget to go over to our YouTube channel, which is just Nordic Mythology Podcast. Hit the little bell, hit the little subscribe button. Adds a whole other level to it when we have guests on who bring little things to show, little slides or artifacts that they hold up. But let's get into today's show. So we have a very special guests today, and that is Sarah and Raymond Rowe. Welcome, thank you.
Hello.
Yeah, thank you very much for coming. Do you want to give a quick little introduction into who you guys are?
Yeah, absolutely. My name's Raymond Rowe. My wife, Sarah Rowe. We are probably more commonly known through WWE. So I am Eric, one half of the Viking Raiders, and my wife is the terrifying Valhalla. So we are on national, international TV. I'm not sure what the simulcast stuff is over in the UK or worldwide,
it's everywhere. You're so humble. Yeah, you know it's everywhere.
But
TV.
Yeah, we're Vikings on TV. We're Vikings off TV. So,
very different Vikings,
right? Very different Vikings. But we kind of bring that full circle. So it's cool that we get to be Vikings at our day job and in our off times
at home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, wonderful. And Sarah, you are the terrifying one. I think all the pictures. Go on, sorry.
I know I'm very like naturally aggressive just in nature. So but I'm a cutie pie, you know, I look like I'm 12. So it's nice to be able to like go on TV and put on all the like the Viking makeup and look, you know, ridiculous and like let my aggressive side be taken a little more seriously than it is in regular life because again, I look like I'm 12. So it is fun being which is hard with these two guys being the scariest of them all, but
usually it is the small one who's the really scary one. Obviously there's the big brutes, they're scary in their own way, but it's the unassuming ones who are the actual bosses as well. I'm sure you can attest to
that. Yeah, the ones with the Napoleon complex, they like got something to prove, or the unhinged ones. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, possibly. So you said Vikings outside. So you both go to reenactment, is that right?
Yeah, so Sarah and I are both Oathsworn Dreng in the Army of Jomsborg, which is the largest international army of Viking reenactors on the planet.
Oh, wow.
We have gone to Denmark and Germany for events, and we've gone to events all over the world. We're planning on coming back to Denmark. I'm actually planning on going to Denmark twice this year for events, and then we are going to go to Denmark and Poland for events. So we train, you know, at least once or twice a week, every single week for the Viking reenactment combat, like Viking martial arts and stuff like that.
Yeah, we have a whole group in Cleveland that we do like with our group is called Lock Erie Lag, like mm-hmm. Lake Erie Vikings.
Okay.
And so we have a whole group that Ray is the leader of and here in Cleveland, but there's tons of groups in the States and there's even more groups internationally that like we all meet, you know, at least once or twice a year. Genevieve, one of our members is actually on the chat right now. And there are a lot of our members are big fans of this podcast. So it was cool that
we told them, you know, I posted a Facebook like, hey, we're going to do the Nordic Mythology podcast. I got like 20 messages like, oh, my God, this is so cool. This is so cool. Like, you better mention us all by name, full name, full title, everything. Yeah. The problem is we've got like 54 or 55 active members in our group just in Cleveland, which our group and what Jamsborg specializes in is we like half the organization is like the Viking combat and the Viking, you know, martial art, the sport aspect of that. Mm-hmm. But then the other half is crafting and culture. And like, we call it the hearth. So like they kind of make it a family, right? They're doing things plant dyed, you know, woven fabrics, you know, hand stitching, blacksmithing, silversmithing. They're doing all wonderful projects. Like the beads I'm wearing here, like this is like glass beads that were made in a historical oven, like the, you know, that how they were doing it 1,000 mm-hmm. years ago. And like the piece of silver is our oath silver for our group.
It's a little bear.
It's a little bear, and it's based on a find in Nesdovo. Like, mm-hmm. So all the stuff that we do for the reenactment side is very historically based and not always historically accurate. We say historically adequate. Like, you know, we're modern people. Mm-hmm. We do the best we can, and we take it very seriously, but it's also, we're still 21st century people.
Yeah.
Trying to be Vikings, you know, or trying to reenact whatever Viking culture. So there's some stuff that needs to make accommodations for.
Yeah, absolutely. I like that because there's a lot of stuff that people think that they know when it comes to this, and then they'll get super picky about it and really strict and want to tell people what they can and can't do. And really, they probably don't really know the truth. They've just heard it somewhere or saw it on a meme and then want to tell everyone.
It's a, like, you know, the Viking community, like a lot of like little communities, is so small. So like, it's unfortunate when you have like people who are like quote unquote elitist of the, you know, historical accuracy part of it. And like, you know, we're kind of eating our own tail at that point when, mm-hmm. you know, there's such a small group already and people are bickering about, you know, like we all do this cause it's fun. And we're at the end of the day, we're just nerds fighting in costumes with blunt weapons. Like it's fancy crowbar fight club, you know? So it's good practice and not to take yourself too seriously in the Viking, you know, world, because we're all just nerds trying to have fun at the end of the day.
And like, my thing is like, I think that specifically Viking reenactment should be like a big tent, right? And everybody under that tent, like there might be different, like you go to the circus, right? If you don't like the lions, you might like the acrobats. If you don't like the acrobats, you'll like the clowns. Mm-hmm. So like someone might want to recreate and like dive as deep as you possibly can go and get like, you know, Birka Grave BJ 581 and do the exact stitch count and the exact fabric weight and the exact, you know, whatever pigments used to dye the clothes and, you know, and make the stuff. And I think that's wonderful. And I mm-hmm. think that's super inspiring that people want to go to that level, but not everyone has to go to that level to enjoy Viking reenactment. Mm-hmm. You know, some people want to be more in the middle. Some people want to be,
just want to fight.
You know what I mean? So, or some people, you know, that could be like the far end over here. Like some people want to just fight and they do the bare minimum when it comes to their kit and clothes and stuff like that, just to get into the fighting. And that's fine too. I think it's the more people come together and do this, I think the more people will enjoy and then be able to like learn from each other. And because maybe somebody who's only into it for the history will eventually go, oh, hey, that fight, that, you know, that sword game looks fun. Or someone else might be in it for swords for a couple of years and go, you know what, that's a really pretty thing. Can you tell me more about that tunic or that trim or that whatever? And then now we're learning from each other and now it's kind of working back and forth. And it's
and because Vikings weren't just fighters, you know, they conquered places to go there and settle and start communities. So it's very highly encouraged that people in the Viking reenactment world, if say you are just a fighter, like it's very encouraged for you to get a hearth skill of some kind, because rarely in, you know, that we know of, people were not just fighters. So like someone like me, I love the fighting part of it, right? Like that's like the reason I'm dressed fancy is because my husband hooks me up. Like I would I've worn tunics where he's like, you, like Vikings cared about the fabrics of their clothes.
Like, you look like you're wearing a dishcloth.
Like you cannot
wear that pair of that video.
Yeah. I'm like, yes, I can. But it is encouraged, even people like me who are just, you know, I love the fighting. Like, it is encouraged, though, to, like, I, you know, I can knit and do some knoll binding, and especially with, like, animal husbandry I specialize in, because, you know, I have a farm, and that is a very Viking age skill that, you know, mm-hmm. doesn't get Absolutely. Kind of brought up a lot. But animal husbandry and milking and soap making and, you know, stuff like that. But it is encouraged not to just be a fighter, to kind of, like, I knitted Ray this hat.
That's a beautiful hat. I was eyeing that hat up as well. So
I was I'm very happy with it. I have a very large head too, like an abnormally large head.
Okay.
So it's hard for me to like find things that fit me well. So
his skull is much larger, but he has these like pit bull muscles on the side of his like head. His head is wider than it is long, and that's a very just strange.
I'm already wearing a helmet. I've got my beard that protects my face, my skull. You know, my dad's always said I've got an extra 2 inches of solid bone on my head. So that's you know.
That has to go well with wrestling and getting dropped. And
I'm very durable. Yeah, it's good.
Hard to kill, Les Rose. Hard to kill.
So you have to be an absolute insurance nightmare when it comes to the WWE, surely. Because how do you go under a contract with someone like the WWE and then go, by the way, once a week we really want to just put on armor and let other people hit us with swords, but the blunt, so don't worry. But that's what we're gonna do.
It's better to ask for forgiveness than permission.
okay.
Well, and now with wrestling, like part of why we train so well, like train so much, right? Train so obsessively is to be safe when we do reenactment fighting, right?
It's very rare that injury.
Yeah, like and injuries in our sport. From a sword fighting standpoint are mostly bumps, bruises, little cuts. You know what I mean? You'll fix them with a butterfly, something like that. And Sarah, you know, Sarah went to TV for like a year straight with like a big bruise on her thigh from me because she wasn't defending a high low strike, you know,
just lighten
and, and it would just, up. You know, just a big bruise on her thigh that just stayed there forever.
Did you learn to defend it?
Now she did.
Later.
It took her some time, but learning, you know.
Well, yeah,
but like, luckily with us, with wrestling, like, is it a sword bruise? Is it a wrestling bruise? Is it, you know, jujitsu? Is it, you know, grappling? You know, what
weightlifting in the gym?
Yeah.
You know? Is it our son?
Yeah, violent? Yeah. Is it a 2-year-old headbutt? You know, so it's
if he's got the raw head. Then maybe.
Yeah, oh, yeah, he does.
He headbutted me in the eyebrow yesterday, and I had, like, my instinct when I get hurt is to react in violence, but I can't do that with my toddler. Okay. So he headbutted me so hard yesterday, and I just squeezed him. I was like, ooh.
Just take a second.
You know what you do?
Yeah, he's definitely a row because he leads with his head and, you know, full speed.
Pushes a pit bull with his head. He's
full speed ahead all the time. But it's good because we live on a farm, so he can kind of just
go
wild and live feral, and you know, we all like just going out in the woods and letting him lead the charge.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's got to be a lot of fun. I would have loved that.
Same. I grew up in like the inner city, and like my oldest nephew is often to remind everybody. He's like, man, Cash is gonna have a very different childhood than we did. You know, like and he. You know, he, my nephew had a very different childhood than I did. So like, you know, they were better, but then Cash is, you know, growing up with chickens and cows and
just very different.
Yeah, very different.
So that's the life you want to give to your kids.
Yeah.
That's why we do it. Like, you know, we have a farm here and we raise our own beef and we, you know, have our own chicken eggs and we do, like regenerative agriculture, like practices, like back how farming used to be. And like, I think cows are cool, but like they're big, destructive, dangerous animals. And so I don't have them just as pets. Like we have the farm we have for my family. And so I can nourish my family in the best way that I know how. So it's all for, you know, it's all for Cash and Ray and our future children that we have this, you know, this crazy Viking farm life.
I love that. Did so did either of you grow up on a farm, or did the have you just come into a farm and figured it out?
So my family was in and out of like, so I have an Uncle Tater. I grew up in like the Hollers in Kentucky, so bear with these names. I had an Uncle Tater. He had a farm. We had lots of beef on there. He raised like he raised goats and Great Pyrenees dogs, his cattle dogs and all this stuff. But it's a very different farm than what I have now. So we don't grain feed, we don't doctor, we don't vaccinate, we don't do any kind of like, because our farm is so small, I'm able to kind of attend to the health of individual animals. And if an animal doesn't fit in here, it just becomes food. So it has been a very, like, no one around where we live farms, except for like an exception of like an hour away, like farms. Like
our neighbors think that we're crazy.
Yeah. Because we farm the way we do.
Exclusively like regenerative, organic, natural, like grass-fed, grass-finished, like nothing, no chemicals, no, you know, we try to use the animals to fertilize the land and then use the other animals to like inner, like, animals, like, you know, the cows will graze and then the chickens come behind them and then they're spreading, you know, they're spreading and fertilizing and doing all the things,
how aerating,
they're
kind
of working working together. And we try not to like force our animals to do anything, force our farm or our land to do anything. And like when, you know, we only milk during, you know, like a lot of people will milk throughout the winter, but they have to bring their cow inside, they have to supplement with grain feeding, they have to do all these things that like are maybe against like how they're naturally done. So we dried, or Sarah dried our milk cow off because it was getting too cold for her to be able to devote the calories to milk. And she's also pregnant. So like this stage in her pregnancy, she needs to choose milk or, you know, growing and stuff like that.
Body fat on.
So like we, you know, we're going without dairy because she's out of milk now, you know, and it's even like the breeds of cows we have and the breeds of chickens that we choose, they're like heritage breeds. These are like we literally have like Viking cows, like they're Scottish Highland cows, which are virtually genetically unchanged since the 6th century. You know,
they're adorable.
They're adorable.
The little baby ones are so cute.
Oh man.
We have babies here now. They're
the best. They're little fuzzy, you know.
They don't let you touch them, but
they're a little feral. They're a little feral. Because we don't bottle feed, you know, we try to do things naturally. We try to, you know, we don't pull calves like there.
Because I believe that like in if something is eats and lives the way it was meant to live, things are resilient and don't normally get sick. So like that goes for cow animals, that goes for humans, like you know, the more kind of natural and ancient and feral, like one of my big passions about the Viking scene and the reenactment scene is like ancient ways of eating and ancestral ways of eating. And I love like that aspect of it. That's kind of, you know, not as popular as sword fighting or sewing or whatever, but it's what like lights my fire. Like when we had the America's largest living history event at our farm last year. Well, this year, technically. And I had like a hand milking class that I was like, come over, I'll teach you how to hand milk a cow. And
it was really fun. And then we're going to be adding like sheep to the farm this year. And I think we're going to be doing either pigs this year or next year. Like we try not to, because we're wrestling too and raising a calf, we try not to overload our farm too much. And like, you know, we're trying not to like get bite off more than we can chew. Right. Because we do travel so much with wrestling
and we slaughter and butcher here as well at the farm.
It's all in house. It's all done in house. It's definitely a labor of love. Like we couldn't sell what we produce here for the amount of time and effort that goes into it. Like it's just not financially possible. But like we have a really, really great support system with my family and
our neighbors,
you know, with some of our neighbors who have kind of like been trained to help us farm the way we do. And like we've got a really big Viking lag. Like our Viking crew in Cleveland helps out. Like the, you know, when we were traveling, like one of the girls from our group would come over and she would milk our cow every day and like, you know, move the cows onto fresh grass and like you know, take care of the chickens. So it's like, it's definitely a community based thing where like we couldn't do it by ourselves. Like it's too big for us, especially with our traveling lifestyle. It's just not possible, but like we have really, really good community. And like, that's part of what drew us to the Viking group initially. Like we always say about our group, like you come for the swords, but you stay for the brotherhood. Like, you know, like you build that family. Like our group, Lock Ear Lag, is like the island of misfit toys, right? Like we're all from different backgrounds. We have different political beliefs and religious beliefs and whatever, but none of that matters because we have this shared passion that unites us, and that we have this shared interest in Vikings and Viking culture and like Viking history, that like all of the stuff, like whoever you are before you walk into like Viking Fight Club doesn't really matter, right? Like, you know, you can pull up in a brand new BMW and shiny wheels and all that stuff, and you can pull up in a car that's like stuttering and like rusted out, and then you put on, you know, your Viking clothes, or you put on a, you know, a t-shirt or whatever, and come into the training hall, and you're exactly the same. Like your money doesn't matter from the outside. Your politics doesn't matter from the outside. Your, you know what I mean? Nothing. Like what you, and like what you put into Vikings is what you get out of Vikings. Like, you know, how much are you training? How much are you showing up? What crafts are you doing? What, you know, what are you adding to the group? What are you adding to the community? What are you adding to the scene? And like that interplay is really what this thing thrives off of. And like the American scene is growing for that, because it's not just our group. It's not just Jamsborg. It's all of the independent groups, or all of the other, you know, organizations or whatever, that are starting to like really come together. I think post, you know, COVID, like people are starved for that community.
Yeah. There was a community vacuum, you know, that needed to be filled. Like I think people kind of took for granted how much we could like see each other and who your friends were. And so like after COVID, with that forced isolation, it really put a spotlight on the need for like tribe and community.
Yeah. I think, it's not, I don't think it was just COVID. I think for years and years, we've been going away from community, even though we're technically like a global community. Now we can talk to, you know, we're sat, what I'm going to guess 3,000-4,000 miles away, and we can have a conversation, and it's quick. You would, as if we're sat in the same room.
Yeah.
But whilst you can do things like this, and you can talk to people on Instagram or whatever, the in-face conversations people have are just so little. And that's one thing I've learned from the podcast, is having like these almost like face-to-face conversations with people and having to listen. It's really picked my skills up from just kind of like having a conversation for a conversation and then really listening really being locked in.
Yeah. And there's nothing that can replace that face-to-face stuff. And like a face-to-face conversation where you and I can like, I could reach out and touch your arm and be like, no man, listen, or, you know, I appreciate you, or like whatever, you know, whatever, that's a connection on a deeper level. And like that most of us are missing, because we, you know, we work long hours. We, you know, we've got family obligations, we've got kids, we've got whatever. And then you go days at a time where you're stuck in that rut. You don't see people who share a value with you, or share passion with you, or share whatever. So like when you get those times and you can either work shoulder to shoulder with somebody at a shared passion, or you can have a face-to-face conversation with somebody, it's special.
And especially like men, like women are a lot better at creating bonds emotionally, you know, like talking on the phone or just going to a coffee and just chatting about whatever. But like men, in my opinion, thrive on like shoulder to shoulder bonding and shoulder to shoulder like challenges. And so I think, you know, like everyone is suffering with this. Like you have processed food. We also have like processed socialization, I think, like on social media. Like, yeah, it'll like, it'll fill your belly, but you're not going to really get what you need out of it. So, I think, you know, men are, you know, especially struggling and men and new mothers are especially struggling in this, you know, new isolated world. And, it's,
I personally, for me, like, I'm not going to emotionally open up to somebody probably over a cup of coffee or something. But if you come over and we're chopping a tree down or something, then
something
you
know about it.
While we're sweating and working, like, you know, we do these things and then kind of those walls start coming down. Like, cause as like guys, like we're taught like, you know, suck it up, man, or, you know, whatever. And like, I think our generation is better at that. Like trying to see with the Grinch. Right. But like, we're trying to, you know, connect more with our feelings and be able to like talk about things and like have these real conversations and connections. But like, that's hard, man. That's hard. And it's scary to like, all right, I'm going to trust you to not make fun of me if I cry, or to, you know, like to still be here if I show myself to be vulnerable. But if we're both working together, right, we're both in this shoulder to shoulder, we're sweating. Yeah. We're building this community, building this trust. Like, and I think that's part of the magic of that Viking community, because whether we're working together to build a table, or we're swinging swords at each other and sweating and bleeding together,
or celebrating kids' birthday parties,
or doing these things, and then you get that shoulder to shoulder bonding and trust, and you're like, man, okay, like I trust you. I can be vulnerable with you, and like that's kind of the magic of that's kind of the magic of that bonding opportunity, that like, if you just self-isolate, it's harder to connect to people. So like having a reason to get together is such an easier thing for, I know for me personally, like it's just a harder thing for me to be vulnerable and like admit that, you know, I'm
like feelings are not unmanly by any means. Like, me and Ray's marriage thrives because we can communicate feelings so well. We're just like kind of expressing that it is harder for men to become vulnerable in a, you know, just a normal social interaction. Like, I haven't seen my friend in years. We can go to coffee and we're both crying by the end of it. And I'm like, oh, I feel so much, you know, it's just easier for the men I know in my life personally to have shoulder to shoulder, you know, like hiking or like camping or a big hunt or something like that's, there is, you know,
I think that's probably changing a little bit, but I think we're probably of a similar generation where we're in like that middle ground where we're probably one of the last generations that were told to suck it up and told to
it's hard to unlearn that stuff.
Yeah, and told to like big boys don't cry. But then in our lifetime, there's been this big shift in, oh no, men can have feelings, men can cry, it's okay. Now come out and tell us all your feelings. And we're kind of in this middle ground of like, oh shit, like I grew up as a child and like the formative years being told, no, you have to be a big boy, tough it up. And now it's okay. It's like, so you've got to try and figure it out and figure out how you can let all this out.
For me, that's scary, right? Like that's scary to like trust someone else with those feelings, because I grew up with that, like, just, you know, just like you're saying, like, no, big boys don't cry, you know, suck it up, like, you know, whatever. And like, and it wasn't, you know, just in my home, it was, you know, it was in sports, it was at school, it was, you know, throughout life, whatever, like, you know, your friends, like, man up, dude, man up, you know what I mean? Like, so like to now be in a situation where you're trying to find in like a limited amount of time somebody that you can trust and be vulnerable with is like, man, that's a scary process for me. I know me personally, I know some people are, I'm sure, way better at than I am. But like, for me, dude, that like, that's it takes something for me to like, be like, all right, I trust you enough. Now I can trust you with my feelings and be like emotionally intimate with you. You know what I mean? Like that's a scary thing.
Like emotional intimacy with us comes very natural, you know, because like, we're intimate with each other. Like we have a bond that like no one else has, but for that man to man, like emotional intimacy, it takes a lot of like the dude feeling safe enough with this other dude with his feelings. So like men are, sorry.
It's all right.
Men are supposed to be like these big, hard things, you know? And
We were told that growing up, whether we are or not. Sorry, she's probably getting a drink.
That's all right. But yeah, I think part of it is also sports. I mean, Sarah can she still hear?
Yeah. Well, she's grabbing a drink. She'll hear when she comes back.
Because I think that she'll be able to attest to this a little bit, being in the wrestling world. But obviously, anybody who's grew up playing sports, and it's usually, particularly when I was a kid, it was mainly guys, you know, you can't show weakness in sport, and it's probably the same in wrestling. You know, I grew up playing rugby all my life, and you know, you don't show weakness, because showing weakness is like a chink in the defensive line, and as soon as you show weakness, somebody's going to run straight at you. It's going to be a horrible afternoon. And it's probably the same in wrestling. You know, you're injured, you can't show it, because you've got to put on the performance, you've got to entertain the people that are there.
Yeah. So, and especially with like, because people are waiting to take your spot.
Okay. You know? Yeah, absolutely.
With where we are at WWE, it's definitely something that it's like the, you know, there's only a very, very limited amount of people in the world that are at the level that we're at. Right. So there's always that internal pressure of like, if I'm hurt, if I show weakness, if I, you know, if my performance level slips, someone's going to take my spot. Someone's going to step up. Someone's going to whatever. So it's that competitive thing that like also then plays in emotionally. Like I can't show weakness. I can't allow that I'm, you know, I'm hurt and I'm struggling with that right now because I'm currently recovering from a major injury that was, you know, sustained in the ring. I had neck surgery like 12 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. And like they fused two of my vertebrae together. So like I'm out for like months at a time right now, which is a very vulnerable spot to be in. Yeah. And like that mental, like obviously, you know, I've worked with WWE doctors every step of the way and they've been wonderful helping me and like making sure that I get the best care I can get. And like, you know, going to flying in to see the surgeons and like all that stuff. But at the same time, I still have to struggle with that vulnerability of like, you know, will my job still be there when I come back? But like, you know, I've had conversations with them and they're like, man, we just want you to be healthy. We want you to be healthy and strong and come back.
Right,
and,
but what you really
you know,
need.
Yeah. 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 There's that like inner voice of like, you know, well, but is that real? Is that, you know, like yeah, whatever. Yeah. So it's like, it's that, and it's like that in any, I think any venue, any, you know, competitive marketplace, like you have that, like those words of self-doubt and it's our job to be like, and no, like we're going to be confident. We're going to face this challenge. We're going to get better. We're going to, you know, do all these things.
But. And from like a female side, you know, it's like wrestling is a male dominated sport. You know, there is a thriving women's division, but it's a third of what the men's division is.
Yeah.
And girls even kind of have a, like a lot of girls there have more of a something to prove, you know, like I'm not hurt. I'm not, you know, I'm fine. Like, it seems like girls will like go through and like, you know, we're very good at tolerating pain. So like girls will kind of suffer for longer because, you know, our spot is even, you know, more fragile on, you know, like it is a show business type world. So like being young, fit, you know, all these things are like very lucrative, you know, very, you know, mm-hmm. wanted in our job. So it's like, you know, I feel like girls especially will kind of be like, I'm fine. Like I'm not hurt. And like, you know, mm-hmm. and like our, you know, I've been in combat sports enough to know that like my body is not built the same, you know, especially my frame is not built the same as Ray's. So
you've not like, got that head.
Yeah. Like I'm not as durable as Ray is. So like I get, you know, hurt a little more easily than Ray does. And so, like I'm 30, Ray is 39, yeah. And like my back is bad, my neck is bad, you know, I'm just not as durable as old. I guess not a lot of the guys are either, but it is something that, you know, does make you feel pretty vulnerable.
I never thought of it like that because I would class wrestling as a sport. But I'm sure there are a bunch of people who are on whatever side. I would say it's a sport. But unlike most sports, like, I don't know, like MMA, football, whatever, you can be injured and you can come back and all you have to do is just be good enough. You have to be at the same level you were when you left. And if you're beating the competition, then you're going to go to the top and you can take back the spot that was left. Whereas I guess with wrestling, it doesn't necessarily always work like that. If you're out for a long time, it's because it is a business as well. There mm-hmm. is that fear of somebody can step in and then you've got to try and find your way back in, I guess.
Absolutely. There is a creative element to wrestling. So it's everything about sport, but it's also everything about entertainment. Mm-hmm. So, you know, where
casted things, TV show.
Yeah. Yeah. where things are moving from a creative standpoint might have passed you by if you were hurt, you know mm-hmm. what I mean? So there is that, that fear or that, you know, whatever, of like, if I'm hurt right now, like, you know, and I just have to trust that like we're going to be able to be worked into a spot creatively and become a valued part of TV, you know? And right now, thankfully, you know, my tag team partner, Ivar or Todd Smith, whatever you want to call him, you know, he and Sarah are out on TV killing it every week. And they're, you know, they're like in a really good spot creatively and physically. They're both healthy. They're both, you know, performing at a really high level. So like right now there's so much momentum around the Viking Raiders name, even though I'm currently injured, which is a really fortunate thing. Right. Like, so when I'm able to come back and then hopefully we just hit the ground running, but like ultimately like that's kind of out of our hands. So we can just control what we can control. And I'll be, you know, I'm going to do my best to come back as strong as I possibly can. And, you know, as healthy as I possibly can. And we're going to come out and we're going to do our jobs the best we can.
But that's good that you've got, you know, it's three of you. So there's two other people who can carry the mantle. So it's not a case of, you know, if you were just a solo wrestler, then if you get injured, you can kind of be forgotten about if it's 9 months. Whereas here, they're able to stay in the limelight, stay present. And then when you come back, it's not, I guess you don't have to have that same amount of fear because the name is still out there. And that's what ultimately what it comes down to. As long as the fans are still going, I want to see the Viking Raiders do their thing.
That's the hope, you know? When I come back now, it's a different formula. It's a fresh coat of paint. It's a livening up of and changing the dynamic. So like, that's what we're ultimately hoping for is like, you know, I'll just come back out. It'll be, you know, Toddy's been wrestling singles matches for a long time. Now it's a tag team matches and everything's fresh and new and exciting and we can just hit the ground running. So, I have faith that that's what's going to happen. And, you know, I think the creative aspect of WWE is like, you know, I feel like we're saying it all the time, but like, man, they're just hitting on a different level. Like the stories are really exciting and, you know, the matches are really exciting and it's just like, it's a really, really good time to be in professional wrestling. You know, the fans are filling arenas every week. It's an exciting time. So like, I have full faith that like, things are going to be exciting when we come back and it's going to, you know, we're going to play a big part of it. And it's,
And I think it's cool that girls are able to play like such like different dynamic characters, you know, like it's really cool that I get to play a, you know, Viking priestess, crazy lady on TV. And that's, there's eras in wrestling where, you know, like, girls are, you know, filling different spots. Cause it is a, you know, it's a TV show and it's cool now that the Vikings are kind of so famous that they needed a Viking girl on TV. So, cause it kind of, you know, WWE kind of follows the trends of like, you know, what's happening in the world, you know, they always have. And because Vikings are so popular that
it's incredibly popular. So there's no, and obviously you were doing the Viking thing before the WWE, right? Wrestling wise. What were you called, the war?
So we were,
many different names.
We've been a bunch of different names, but like I started back in 2003 as a singles wrestler. And then in 2014, I actually met up with Todd, at the first time and his wrestling name was Hansen at the time. Mine was just my real name, just Raymond Rowe. We wrestled in a top prospect tournament and Toddy will be really mad if I don't tell everybody he beat me in the finals of that tournament in our one and only match together. So he was better on that night. And then we formed a tag team shortly after that. So that was well before WWE. And then he and I found a lot of success worldwide as a tag team called War Machine. And like that's we kind of had like a like Mad Max-ish
barbarian.
Viking
barbarian-ish
aesthetic, right?
Any like big guy you see at a Ren Faire that
was We could have easily been walking the Vegas Strip or at a Ren Fest or, you know, any of that stuff. Like, you know, we had like crazy headgear and kind of armor and like, you know, leather battle skirts and stuff. And like, just, you know, I mean, and we leaned into it. It was fun. And like, we really kind of came into that style when we were in Japan. We toured Japan and like, then like face paint started coming and the headgear started growing and it was a really cool.
Cool
energy. And then while we were in Japan, we got noticed by WWE and then came to WWE. We changed our name in WWE to the War Raiders. And that was when we were in WWE NXT. because that was a better, there's this character, I guess, somewhere out, by this little company named Marvel, that, you know, has a War Machine, some problem with trademarks. Yeah. I don't really know how that worked. But trademarks with WWE was able, you know, they trademarked War Raiders. Toddy and I love the name. So we just rolled right into it. We wore the same stuff. We did the same moves. We, you know, had the same energy. So we just continued with the War Raiders. And then about a year later, we got called up to WWE Raw, on like the main roster, and they wanted to change our names again, and it was actually to a name that we had when they first changed our name from War Machine, and they wanted to call us the War Raiders. We were like, oh, but what about Viking Raiders? Like, that's a cool name, right? Yeah. We're Viking, cool thing. And they were like, nah, we like War Raiders. Okay, cool. War Raiders it is.
But I can't believe they said that.
Yeah.
Vikings has been popular for a while.
When we went up to Raw, they were like, hey, we're going to change your name again. We don't want it to be War Raiders. We're thinking Viking Experience. And I was like, how about Viking Raiders? They're like, no.
Whoever said Viking Experience, they need to be sacked. I know that's harsh, but that's an awful name.
It came up on the screen, and I went up to one of the higher-ups there, and I was like, is that a joke? And he went, I wish it was.
Viking Raiders is quite clearly the next step as well Raiders. It's like, yeah. Okay.
They were trying to get a Disney ride.
I think it was they were looking for what Vikings were, because they were trying to call us just the Vikings, and then there was a problem with trademarks with that and whatever. So okay, we were the Viking Experience for literally one day. Like, we came out as the Viking Experience.
It was like their debut, though.
Yeah, Twitter melted down. They have never forgotten that name. They were like, this is the silliest name we've ever heard. And then we were the Viking Raiders the next day, and have been good. The Viking Raiders ever since. So it was good. And like as we've been that name, we've been able to like sneak in more and more like real Viking stuff, like, you know, or like historical stuff. So obviously the costumes we wear on TV are now, we designed them, like we came up with them.
Wearing a tunic, you know, a linen tunic and pants isn't as like, you know, cool.
Yeah. It's not, it's not a movie Viking. Right.
But you've got to be able to move and be athletic in them, I guess.
Yeah. So we definitely go towards that like movie Viking feel, you know, that barbarian type, you know, crazy leather and fur stuff, because that's more showbiz. That's more, you know, lights and glamour and stuff like that. But like go ahead.
I was gonna say that's also it, is that I think a lot of people forget that, particularly stuff like this, you have to take the box of people outside of people like us who are really interested in this stuff and go, oh, this is what they actually wore. You have to go for the mass audience who see a Viking as, you know, the fur, the leather, and that's what they see, and that's what they want. And they want the names Eric and Ivar and Valhalla and Ragnarok, because that's what they know. And they're like, okay, this is the thing for us.
Valhalla wasn't trademarked by anybody.
Like, I can't believe that.
We couldn't either, because she had
I was pitching names like Scothy and like, you know, like, because I have her on my arm, and I was pitching like, and they're like, no, that sounds a lot like Scotty, and I was like, yeah, it does. So we're like pitching a bunch, and you know, I'm coming up with names and books that I've read, and none of them are hitting. And you know, one of the guys is like, screw it, try Valhalla. Came back fine.
Yeah, and it worked. So, and like what we've done too is we've actually sprinkled in like some of like the historical Viking stuff into our WWE characters as well. So like a lot of times when we're doing like, we do like video packages, or we ceremonies. Do these special, special like, you know, ceremonies, offsite type stuff. And like, there'll be real Viking shields or real Viking weapons.
Or we can wear a tunic. Or we'll have like a linen dress.
Yeah. Or like, we actually just did one a couple months ago where like members from our group in Lock Your Lag, like they filmed it at the farm. And like, we built a big bonfire out back, and like members from our group, Lock Your Lag, were on, you know, as extras on the show. And like, they were wearing like accurate chainmail and accurate helmets and tunics and pants and all, like, so they were, we're trying to, we do incorporate like,
we're trying,
you know, Viking, like historically accurate stuff. And like, it's for us, it's just Easter egg stuff. Cause it's cool. Like we're like, oh, look at that. There's a real Gearman Boo helmet on there, you know, but like, for the wider audience, like you're talking about, like they know that we are what they think of when they see Vikings.
And then
associated with us, then it's like, oh, that guy's a Viking too. That guy's a Viking too. So like for us, it's kind of cool to like play that and show both worlds, you know, when we get the opportunity to.
Mm-hmm. No, I love that because you do have to tick both. And I think I've said it on here a few times, how The Northman, the movie that came out a couple of years ago, like that's a great film for people who are interested in this stuff because there's so many Easter eggs in there, but it's a terrible film for normal people who don't understand what's going on. For them, it's just boring and a little bit weird.
Yeah,
and us were like, there are actual Scandinavian like colors on the houses.
And I think that's what shows when you get not get this wrong, because I really enjoyed the film and I love what he did. But I think if you don't play into the audience and play the game into the popular culture side of things, it can fall a little flat because you have to get that general
market, right? You have to play to your audience.
Read the room.
Yeah.
You have to get that general audience in. Okay. So Ray, I keep wanting to call you Eric. I'm trying my hardest. I'm sure you get it all the time.
Oh, yeah, either way.
Don't call me Shirley.
So Sarah, obviously we heard Ray's little introduction in how he came up through. Obviously you were in the WWE before, and then...
Yeah, it's just a little bit before. So we both...
Tell him. So this is something that I always brag about with Sarah. Like, tell them a little bit about how you got popular beforehand, because that's going to surprise a lot of people.
Oh, okay.
I was on the independent wrestling scene like Ray was for, you know, a lot less time than he was, but for some time. And what made me famous was, I guess, infamous rather, was I would do, it was called deathmatch wrestling. So it was like hardcore style wrestling light tubes, thumbtacks, barbed wire,
panes of glass, dollar bills getting stapled to your tongue.
In my, you know, like,
yes, yeah, I've seen them.
So my, you know, my claim to fame was that, and it got me, you know, noticed very early in my career. But when kind of WWE started looking at me, so backtrack a little bit. So the day I graduated high school, 4 days later, my first time ever, this little Kentucky girl, the first time I ever went on a plane, I flew to Japan and lived in a dojo for 3 months, left 3 months again. And I was like, I like Japanese wrestling and I want to learn how to be a wrestler. So I'm going to go to Japan. Very, very crazy. But I lived in the Japanese dojo system for a long time and became the wrestler, you know, that I kind of wanted to be. And then when I came back home, I was still kind of dabbling in death matches, but I started doing like extra work for WWE, like just kind of like behind the scenes kind of things. And it got to the point where I was like, I want to go to WWE. Like, that's what I want to do. So I stopped doing death matches because it was like, I have like a scar this long on my forehead. Like it was scarring my head up bad. And I stopped doing death matches and started wrestling more. But then I was doing so much extra stuff for WWE that the people were there were like, do you work here yet? And I'm like, not yet, but I'm trying, you know? So I finally got hired at NXT. And then when I was in NXT, I was just, my name was Sarah Logan. My favorite book series is the First Law trilogy. And one of the characters in there is named Logan, the Bloody Nine. Okay. So Logan from Logan. And, but I was in a group called the Riot Squad, and it was me, this blonde girl named Liv, this crazy punk girl named Ruby Riot, real name story, Ruby Riot. And we were like this trio of bad guys that like, we just got put with everyone. We wrestled Ronda Rousey. We wrestled the Bellas, like anyone that needed to like beat up some bad guys. We were those bad guys. So I traveled with them.
Professional bad guy.
Yeah, professional. Yeah. I've always been in WWE a professional bad guy. And so it's really funny. I'm gonna say that more. And so started this WWE journey, and then going through the Riot Squad, and COVID happened. WWE let go of like 100 wrestlers. Wow. And a lot of, like, just with COVID, all that stuff, like, that happened everywhere.
Companies everywhere.
So I was part of the first round of cuts. Obviously devastating, you know, because me and Ray, like, we didn't get brought to WWE as a pair. But somehow we met before WWE, and our paths both took us to this, like, the...
I was going to ask that so that we can cover that quickly, I guess, because otherwise we're going to end up running out of time. So you two were together before...
Yeah. We met actually at... I was living in Texas at the time. She was living in Kentucky at the time. We met at a show in Chicago because we were both just flew in for that show. Yeah. And it's funny. Okay. Yeah. Funny enough, she was like staring at me in the locker room. And I'm not very personable. I had a rule that I would never date a female wrestler.
Okay.
I was not, echoing back her little looks. And then the girl she was wrestling was like, hey, why don't you talk to my friend? She thinks you're cute. And I walked. I had a really big match that day, and I was really like focused on that, so I was kind of distracted. And I walked up and I was like, hey, I'm sorry, I'm a dick. You know, my name's Ray, nice to meet you. And I walked away.
I was like, it's okay.
Yeah. And then you know, we kept running into each other on more shows and more shows. And then
the millennial, I wrote him on Twitter. I was like, hey, will you watch my matches?
Yeah.
And then we became
friends, and then we were just
inseparable
gonna,
ever
yeah,
since.
Yeah.
The chance of us both being on Raw at WWE, even though we didn't get hired together, we weren't put together. So I got let go during COVID. We had a child, you know, wasn't really sure if I was going to come back to wrestling, but then, you know, WWE calls and is like, hey, we want to put you with your husband. Yeah. I'm like,
with the Vikings.
And I was like, can I bring my son? They're like, yeah. I'm like, bet, I'll be there. And so we weren't always in a group together until the past, I think it was a year, a couple months ago that we are, because, you know,
more than that now, I think,
yeah, but I was, you know, I was with, you know, the Riot Squad, and we were, you know, what we were. And now I'm with the Viking Raiders, and, managing and being the scary, crazy person on the side does a lot more good for my body than being in the ring. Let him handle all the. I still get, you know, thrown on the floor sometimes,
or through tables sometimes,
but yeah, not as often as I used to.
Yeah, you don't get off that lightly. When they say manager, what does that equate to? Is that I assume you're not actually doing the behind the scenes management,
like Valhalla in her face, contract negotiations and our paperwork. Yeah.
So it's different for each person, you know, because it has to be within character. So my role as a manager of the Viking Raiders is I'm like a conduit to the gods. Like, the gods speak to me, tell me what the boys need to do. I tell the boys, and so on and so forth. So this, you know, we're always justified bad guys because it's not us that's doing this. Like, the gods are telling us, like, it's out of our hands kind of thing.
Yeah, so we're good guys in our mind. It's you people, all you people that call us bad guys.
So I normally like talk more, and I like lead the promo stuff. And like, if we do the Viking ceremonies, like I lead the ceremonies, and the boys, you know, are just like the muscle and the, you know,
right. She's got the plans. We just carry it out. And like, it also, you know, ringside, she's always there to help, you know, interfere on our behalf or tip the scales to us,
behind the ref's back.
Everything always within the rules, you know, no cheating whatsoever.
right down the middle.
Yeah. No, nothing underhanded in any way. But she's able she's able to be there, and it's a really cool and special thing when we get to do these things together, right? Like, because it's something that we're so passionate about individually, but it's also something that we share together. So it's
We're together, like when we're both on the road together, like we do bring our son. We do bring, like, it's a family, you know, like.
My dad travels with us if it's close enough. And it's actually one of the Jomsborg members that comes and travels. She comes and helps watch our son. Like, it's definitely something that, like,
she made these pants I'm wearing.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah,
she makes our, we call her our Viking nanny, which is just because we think it's funny to have a nanny.
Our au pair.
Yeah.
Au pair, yeah.
she
that's when you reach a certain level of success, they become au pairs.
Yeah, I'm not. We're definitely not to an au pair level, but we like to claim it.
Yeah, we have fun.
But like her full time job is she's a Viking seamstress, right?
Oh, she makes.
That's what she does for a living.
Viking Versace. Yeah, like, if you want the best of the best with like historically accurate clothes, like the way she sews stuff, her hand finishing, her embroidery, like it's all just like
embroidery, silk finishing, whatever. She literally makes everything that when it comes to the reenactment size, she makes everything that we wear. Yeah. But she also makes a lot of like, because she works with natural fabrics, she makes a lot of the clothes that Sarah just wears in everyday life, like her we call them her Sarah pants, like her which are just kind of like a modification of Viking pants.
They're like Hedeby pants. Yeah, so we call them Sarah V pants. Her name is Utlander Clothing, so Utlander Clothing. She has an Instagram. She's wonderful.
Yeah, so she comes with us, she watches Cash, and it's cool because like we're always surrounded by that Viking community, but like
our son is, he's never been around people that don't just love him. Yes, Utlander Clothing.
Sorry, we're responding to people in the chat.
But Cash has never been around someone that doesn't just absolutely love him. Like, we're very fortunate. We've never had to, take him anywhere but that. So it makes me cry. I have to think too much about it.
But it's a cool thing to like, because we're able to do this as a couple and as a family, like, when we travel to shows, like, so we're going on the road, we're going on tour three, four times a week. We're able to bring our son, my dad, JJ, Utlander Clothing. And they're able to watch an adventure with Cash while we're falling down for a living. And, he gets bored backstage. So they're doing whatever. They're going to a park or a children's museum or whatever, terrorizing a hotel, like whatever they're doing.
Yeah.
But like,
cause I breastfed him exclusively for 2 years. Breastfed until 2.5 years in a capacity. So, he had to come to the shows with us for a long time because I was his food. So now that he's, just smashing beef and berries, he's like a little bear. He can stay at the hotel while we go to, TV.
And adventure with
people.
But
adventures with JJ.
Yeah, but it's a really cool thing that like we get to do that together. Like, so like one of our dreams growing up, and like because we were outside of WWE for so much of our career, one of our things that we're like, oh man, before I retire, I really want to experience the WrestleMania. I really want to go to WrestleMania. WrestleMania is like the thing, right? So if anybody who's not wrestling fans is watching, like that's the Super Bowl of Vikings. Mm-hmm. Or I'm sorry, the Super Bowl of professional wrestling. Sorry guys.
It's all right.
But like that's the, that's the World Series, it's the Super Bowl, it's the, everything all rolled up into one. And like, I know that you and I were talking about it off the air a little bit about this picture that we posted. And cause this past year, WrestleMania was held at SoFi Stadium, which is the, that's the stadium where the Los Angeles Rams play. And there was like 85,000 people there, I think. And there's this ramp that's, 75 feet in the air. And it's, you walk from this giant stage with these crazy video boards behind you, and you're walking, it's like a ramp from 75 feet up all the way down to the ring.
To the people,
and like, there's just a sea of humanity. It was so overwhelming to like, to think about or like to experience. Like, it was something that like, while it was happening, like, there were so many people and it was so loud, I couldn't hear anything. Like, and I couldn't, and I'm not talking about.
You have no choice but to our brains can't.
Yeah, you cannot comprehend.
Have to disassociate,
it like hit you in the, like the noise, the level of volume hit you in the chest. Like I couldn't hear anything from the crowd, but you could feel the crowd. It was an experience like nothing else. And like, it was such a bucket list for us. Cause like we've been in WWE in some fashion since 2018. And for me and Todd, it was our first WrestleMania. Like Sarah had been on one of the pre-show battle royals with WrestleMania before. So she had experience with WrestleMania, but for me and Todd, this was our very first one. And we got to do it side by side, which was really, really cool. And like, when we came back through the curtain, we like kind of, it kind of all like hit like the reality of what happened,
like,
right? So we went kind of off to the side from everybody and just we had a good cry. Like all three of us are just crying, like crazy. Like, oh my, I cannot believe this actually happened. Like, this is real life. We just did that. There was 85,000 people. It was like all of our wildest dreams. Yeah. Now, funny enough, in we were doing a walkthrough of our entrance earlier in the day, and we're on that, you know, we're doing that 75 foot in the air ramp, and Toddy slips and falls on his ass. I mean, cameras are rolling. Oh, it's a, there's footage out there somewhere. I guarantee it, of Toddy falling down. And he's going to, I had to tell about him beating me earlier. I'm going to tell him about him.
He's like,
this is our love language with each other. Sorry. We just got a low battery.
Sorry.
It was such an overwhelming thing that like we were able to come back through the curtain and have that like moment of like, wow, like this happened. And it was so much more special to do it with one of my best friends in the entire world and my wife. And like, it was such a cool thing to be able to do together and share together. And it kind of wraps up, 'cause like everything we're doing is together, right? We do Vikings together. We do family and farm together. We do wrestling together. So it's a beautiful thing where we get to spend our lives together. And I think that's, you know, we're more rich than you can ever imagine, because we have that bond and that life that we're together. We don't have to travel away from each other. You know, so much of my life, you know, I was working 2-3 jobs, you were working 2-3 jobs. We were, you know, long overtime and away from each other, and then only getting a couple hours together today. And it was it's such a special thing that we don't have to do that anymore. We're passionate, you know, for our hobbies, for our passions, for our, you know, our job, our careers, we're able to do it together. And we're so thankful for that every single day that we're able to do that together.
Mm-hmm. And he said he couldn't share feelings. Look at that.
No, it just took me a little while to warm up.
We got there. No, that it is absolutely beautiful, because I think for a lot of people, they see the WWE and they don't see the years and years of effort and heartbreak and injuries and, you know, having to work two jobs and dedication to get there. And I think for anybody, if they haven't seen the documentary on Netflix, the wrestling one, is it Al Snow who runs it now?
Yeah. I lived in Louisville, Kentucky, in that wrestling scene. So
yeah.
All those guys.
Yeah, a lot of those guys in the thing.
I don't know if you've seen that documentary, but I think that portrays well, and it shows how people, you know, the struggle they have to go through to get and hopefully just get to the WWE. And the vast, vast, vast majority of people are never gonna make it.
And
shot in the dark, yeah.
We equated a lot to like playing in a band. Right. Like a lot of people, there's thousands of bands across the country. Right. And they play, you know, they might play in front of a sold out house, or they might play in front of 50 people at a VFW hall. And then, you know, the show's over, the lights are off. They've got to load out their own equipment. They've got to, you know, pack it in the car themselves. Yeah. Back to work on Monday. But that's what they're passionate about. And Sarah and I spent a really, really long time on the independent scene doing wrestling.
Loading in your
own ring, you know what I mean? Like building the ring, setting up chairs, passing out flyers throughout the week. And then like you work, you know, like you said, you work for years to become an overnight success. Mm-hmm. You know, no one sees that stuff. No one sees that part of the journey. And like it's something that makes us appreciate every little moment that much more, because we did go through that long, long road. We did work so hard to get there. We did, you know, we did share that struggle, and we're fortunate enough, like Sarah and I are one of the few couples in WWE that didn't meet in WWE, right? Like we were together before WWE, and we came together and we shared that struggle independently, right? On the smaller wrestling circuits. And then we were able to, experience both the lows and the highs together, you know. So it was a cool thing.
Mm-hmm. Is your phone gonna die?
We're getting close. We're getting close.
We can also switch
phones if we need to for the Q&A.
Okay. So, yeah. Before we wrap up, I did want to just touch on that, and we spoke about it a little bit before, which was Ed Gamester's wrestling show that he does, where it takes wrestling and theater, plus theater tells the story of Ragnarok through through wrestling, which is fantastic. But again, I remember going to his first show and him building the ring in the middle of the theater and helping him take it all down. Yeah. And they're fucking, they're heavy. They're not a small thing, you know, and having to lift it all, take it all and carry it and put it in the van, and him having to do that over and over and time again whilst this thing built up.
Yeah. And it's, so I've watched him on Instagram.
He's in the chat. I saw an ed in the chat. I didn't realize it was ed. So he said they've just done their 108th show and they're still doing that.
I know some one of the a couple of the wrestlers I know have wrestled on his show, like one of the only like Icelandic wrestlers there is, like was on his show.
But I've talked with Ed back and forth on Instagram for a while, and I've watched that show develop, and I think that is such a really cool use of the art form of professional wrestling to connect with the art form of theater and tell like sagas and tell, you know, Nordic mythology stories and tell this, and you get to do professional wrestling in a way that is totally different, because it's not in the necessarily like sport context. It's in a theater context, right? But you're using professional wrestling, and like what we do is we tell that, you know, physical theater in the context of a sport, right? We're trying to win the match. We're trying to win the championships. We're trying to whatever. What Ed is doing is really revolutionary, because he's using professional wrestling to tell traditional theater stories and to tell, you know, retelling the sagas and retelling, you know, the sagas around, or the myths and the mythology around Ragnarok and all this stuff. And I'm like, man, this is fascinating, and it's groundbreaking, and it's exciting. And it's, you're using that, the medium of professional wrestling and that art form of professional wrestling to evolve it and to take it in a different way that I've never seen someone do that before. So it's a show that I really badly want to see live, because I've only seen clips of it and I'm fascinated.
And like, cause wrestling, there's a famous line in wrestling, like no one remembers what you did. They only remember how you made them feel. Right. Mm-hmm. And so to have, to have wrestling that's all feeling is super cool, because it's like the story's built in, like the highs and lows are built in, and like I think it's really cool.
Yeah, it's a fascinating way to use the art form.
It is, and I remember the first time I saw it, and I said to you before, Ray, how that was the first time I ever saw wrestling live, and that gave me such an appreciation for what you guys do. And I remember speaking to Ed a few weeks ago, and he said, oh, well, you know, we don't do anything too serious. It's just kind of little bumps and like small stuff. And I'm like, it fucking sounds like the
I'll
impact.
Tell you what, there is no little bump, like none. Like you hit the ground, you hit, you know, you fall flat on your back, you fall flat on your chest, whatever the situation is, like there's no little bump. It's all impact. It's all, you know what I mean? Like it's a lot. Like it hurts. And it, you know, I think there's and you know, you take a risk every time you enter that ring, and anytime you know, you're doing that stuff. And like, we talk about from like the scripted aspect of it, like in Hollywood, like if there's a fight scene, you're using sometimes extras, sometimes not. You're filming it 10, 20, 30, 40 times and switching camera angles and switching, you know, whatever. And there's a very, you know, very specific script that you have to cap, you know, A to B to C. And wrestling's not like that. Wrestling's done in front of a live audience.
One take.
You know, one take, live.
And
TV
if you mess
cameras
up, the whole crowd would literally tell you that you suck. So there's that.
It's a very spontaneous art form. So it's really cool to see. Like I have a lifelong love of the traditional art form of professional wrestling, where we tell stories of good and evil, big and small, you know, right versus wrong inside the context of the sport. You know, Ed is doing something really exciting because he's taking the medium of wrestling and he's using it to take, you know, to tell different stories and to tell it within a different medium and a different art form. I think it's fascinating because it's like an interpretive, you know, a different way to use art, right? Like it's somebody who paints classically and then someone who paints like expressionist, you know what I mean? You're using the same the same stuff, but you're doing it in a completely new way. It's really exciting.
Expressionist.
Yeah. I mean, if you guys ever come over to the UK, we will go and watch the show together.
We love coming to the UK. So that's a win. And then definitely want to go and see his show.
Yeah.
Wonderful. Okay. Let's wrap this up and then we'll do a quick Q&A, and then I'll let you guys get back to your day, as I'm sure you're incredibly busy. Do they do like a end of year special when it comes to the WWE?
Is that like a big they show? They did a best of on Christmas. So like WWE is very kind and lets us just, you know, stay home for Christmas. And,
okay, that's nice.
They usually do two tapings the day, but the week before
pre-tape an episode.
But this time they did the best of. So WWE's new year actually starts. The season restarts not on the new year. There's like a certain time of year where it's like the new
WrestleMania.
Season. After WrestleMania, yeah.
Yeah, we built for WrestleMania, which is going to be in April, early April. So it's, I think the Royal Rumble is the next really, really big pay-per-view coming up the end of January. And then, you know, the winner of the Royal Rumble will get a guaranteed title shot at WrestleMania. So it's, everything kind of leads to there. And then stories refresh and,
so after so the answer, yes, WrestleMania, they do like a year end thing, but wrestling doesn't.
There's no off season.
Yeah, there's no off season. No, so there's not.
I guess at least you get Christmas off, because I know a lot of sports they play over the Christmas period, don't they?
Very nice. Like WWE's become very family, is very friendly, family friendly. And that's like we were able to bring cash and.
There's a lot of parents on the roster, a lot of parents in the creative, it's cool. It's getting to kind of experience that with your peers and stuff is an exciting thing. That's
wonderful.
Cool.
Perfect. Okay. We'll wrap this up and do the Q&A. Thank you both very, very much. Like I say, I assume I know you're so busy with the wrestling. You'd be telling me about the farm, parenthood. I don't know.
We make time for important
things. Yeah, we make time. We make time.
Thank you very much. This has been lovely. I feel like we could literally have sat here for hours and spoken.
Yeah. Well, we can definitely do another one when schedules allow. We've had a lot of talking to you, so we could organize another one when it works for both of us.
Wonderful. That would be great. Perfect. Yeah, let's wrap this up. You guys can go about your day. Thank you ever so much for taking the time and also like in not being rushed. You know, you've taken genuine time to sit here.
Happy. Genuinely enjoyed the conversation. And it was cool seeing like some of the bottom of the screen, like some comments and stuff, questions and stuff will come up.
A girl in here, Genevieve, she's an author.
She's the one who introduced us to
She's been on the podcast
before.
Books
are really good. She's part of our Viking group and part of another local Viking group. She's great.
Perfect. Wonderful. Well, thank you. Thank you very much. And I get a feeling this isn't the last time we're going to talk. So
yeah, you got our contact now. So don't be a stranger.
Yeah. Perfect. Thank you both very, very much.
Thank you so much.
I guess I would say, do you guys have anything you want to plug, but your social medias are way bigger. So I guess it's like a drop in the pond maybe.
But I mean, if people want to follow us, it's neither one of us really mess around with Twitter. I'm Eric_WWE on Instagram.
Valhalla WWE on Instagram. We're not super active.
Yeah, not super active because we do post stuff, but we're not we're kind of busy. So
I mean, yeah, that's understandable.
Yeah.
If you want to see pictures of us, go on there. If you're hoping to interact with us, I'm sorry, but we do not interact very often on there. So yeah.
we try sometimes, but it's an up and down thing.
It's hard to keep up. I have a very modest following compared to you two, and it's difficult sometimes when you get people replying to like stories and stuff like that. You want to reply, and I forget. Yeah. So I imagine for you two, it's.
It can get overwhelming, too much. I can't
But Sarah's and it's funny too, because all our friends know, like, if we're in group texts or whatever, like, Sarah's never gonna respond. ever. Like, just don't include her. Just include me, and I'll tell her what really she wants message. To know. Sarah is greatly looking forward to the day where she can just get a flip phone. You know, those old, or like one of those old, like Nokia brick phones. She hates having an iPhone. So she really wants to,
I just crave genuine human connection. And like, it's just, it puts me in the other direction. If I'm just interacting with a lot of people, you know, like every once in a while is fine. But if like, I'm mainly interacting with people that are online. It like
yes, does dumb phones. Yeah. Dumb phones. That's exactly what she wants.
it just does things to my soul that I don't like. So I just don't like to do it.
Wonderful. Yeah. So we wrap this up because I'm off to see a very niche anime film in the cinema now. And there's only like one or two screenings of it. So I have to make sure I make the screening.
Get out of here. We'll talk to you. Thank you so much.
We will. And for anybody, you can just follow us at Nordic Mythology Podcast on all the different platforms. And I'm Daniel_Farron1, and obviously the business at Horns of Odin, which I will message you both about that because I would love to do something with the two of you. So we specialize in handmade drinking horns and war horns, all that kind of stuff.
I followed your Horns of Odin page long before I knew about the podcast. I've been looking at your stuff for a long time.
So yeah, I'd love to have a chat. I'd love to make something. I like making items for people that I like, and just it's like so obviously because I do. Obviously, we have the business, and I make like tons of Helm of Oars, tons of Vegvisius, tons of like run of the mill stuff that people buy. But my real passion is just cool one-off pieces that like mean stuff to people. So I'd love to chat to you.
Yeah, would love to talk to you about this stuff because that would get used definitely on
many a ceremony.
Yeah, ceremonies and if we can sneak it on a WWE TV, we will.
Yeah, look at that. Have a little war horn.
Yep.
That's it. Awesome. Thank you guys very, very much. Really appreciate it. Hope you have a wonderful day.
Thanks, guys.
Bye.
All right, guys. Take care.